adult stem cells versus embryonic stem cells? Have we gotten to a stage where embryonic stem cell research is no longer needed?
Well, so just to be clear, though, adult stem cells and iPS cells are different.
What,
right?
Is iPS?
Okay,
well,
so
what is iPS?
So iPS is induced pluripotent stem cells, and this is the technique that was just developed a couple of years ago by Jamie Thompson at UW and Shinya Yamanaka in Japan. So this is a technique where we can take a skin cell from a patient and introduce genes that actually make it go backwards and become something that looks like an embryonic stem cell.
Okay.
And then we can take it forward and differentiate it into a heart cell or a brain cell. And, you know, over those 2 years since the discovery, they've made a lot of progress in understanding the cells and how they differ from embryonic stem cells, but I still think we have a lot to learn. So, you know, I think the key question in as far as using it in a clinical setting is really twofold. One is, in some cases you have diseases that are acute, they have to be addressed in a very short time window. For example, somebody that's just had a heart attack. They typically have to be treated in a very narrow window because once the heart has had this insult, it will start remodeling and scar tissue gets formed. And so typically we have to treat within a couple of weeks. And in that situation, it will be tough to use something like induced pluripotent stem cells because the process of reprogramming it back to an embryonic stem cell, choosing that cell, and then taking it forward to a heart cell takes a fairly long period of time. So right now we can do that with embryonic stem cells. We can take a vial out of the freezer. We can expand it and differentiate it into a cardiac cell, and we know what we're starting with. And that's the other issue. From person to person to person, there's a lot of variability. And you can guess that even starting with a skin cell from an older person versus younger, it's really difficult to reprogram those cells consistently. So, you know, I think that that autologous therapy where you're doing self therapy is challenging, and it's going to take us, I think, quite a bit of time before we can get there consistently and be sure that we can get a heart cell from you or whoever and be able to consistently get the right cell type and not create a cell type that might potentially harm the patient.
I mean, this might be a simplistic question, but just for the record, I mean, do you guys use embryonic stem cells in this facility?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, we do. And I view them, again, as they're two different cases. The embryonic stem cells we use for what we call an allogeneic therapy, where we create a bank of cells that can be used to literally treat thousands of patients. And the autologous that we're just starting to develop, where we can do something like induced pluripotent stem cells.
Bush put in a lot of restrictions on stem cells that could be used. Obama lifted those. Are you? Have you expanded the use of embryonic stem cells or had access to more lines in the last year or two?
We have access to more lines. I don't know what the current count is on the NIH registry, but certainly there are a number of new lines that have been listed. I think that, you know, it's good now that the original lines that Jamie Thompson derived are now all listed on that. We continue to use those lines really as the dominant lines. They're almost like a reference standard for us. So, you know, in going forward, one of our key issues is, you know, looking at new lines that have been derived without using the mouse feeder cells that were used in the original derivations. That's, for obvious reasons, is something that we want to get away from when we're using that for a clinical application.
And that's because of the cancer risk?
It's because of the risk of viruses that might have been transmitted from the mouse line to the human cells.
Okay.
You know, there's always this concern that you might get a virus of mouse origin that then gets into a human and somehow changes. And that's a real risk that the FDA is concerned about, and we're all concerned about making sure that we do our best to minimize that. Now, that being said, we've made GMP banks of the H1 and H9 lines, which are the ones that Jamie originally derived, and they're the most popular lines that have been the most widely used. And we've put them through very rigorous testing for murine pathogens, and as far as we know, they're completely free. But you always have that concern that there might be something there that we don't know about yet.
If you had a governor opposed to embryonic stem cell use but supported other stem cells being used, how would that affect the work that you do here?
Well, I think that it would, you know, obviously we would have to shift and be in line with the state's policies or laws, whatever it became. I think it's important to note that even the question of adult stem cells, you hear people talk about that all the time. It's really important to understand the limitations of adult stem cells. We work with a stem cell type called mesenchymal stem cells, which are kind of a good example of an adult stem cell. It comes from bone marrow. And we can grow those cells in our facility And each time we divide cells, we call our passage. We can grow them out to 6 or 7 passages. With embryonic stem cells, we literally have gone up 100 passages. So adult stem cells, they have their place, but they are limited typically in how much we can expand them and what types of cells we can expand them into. Mesenchymal stem cells can expand into bone and cartilage and a few other types, whereas embryonic can give us theoretically every cell type in the human body and can be expanded almost indefinitely. So they each have their place. I think it's a mistake to rule out any cell type, because we right now don't always know what exact cell type is going to be the best to treat whatever disease.
A few years ago, the legislature passed a bill that the governor vetoed that they said was an anti-cloning bill. Mm-hmm. If that had been signed into law, how would it have changed what you do here?
Yeah, I'm not really sure that it would have changed much that we do here. You know, to be honest, I don't really know the content of the bill, but I take it that it had to do with therapeutic cloning, somatic cell nuclear transfer. And so we're not really involved in that here at this point. And I think that we would look at iPS cells as being pretty much in line with that, because it's a way to create an autologous cell type. So I'm not, to me, I'm guessing that it maybe wouldn't have affected things that much. But, you know, from a scientific perspective, we're always, you know, I think aware of the fact that as you start putting rules in place that prevent us from doing certain things, it might down the road take away an option for us for a therapy. And that's the one thing that always worries people. I mean, we've done our best to put everything in place to address the ethics issues. We have a number of boards here that review what we're doing, whether it be working with stem cells. We have a stem cell research oversight committee, or whether it's humans, we have a institutional review board that reviews everything we do in clinical trials. There are things in place to review that, and I think that that's where we should let the review happen. We don't want any tools taken out of our toolbox.
Critics of the use of embryonic stem cells have pointed to the potential for cells derived from the umbilical cord. Where do things stand with that, and are they a viable, I guess, alternative to embryonic stem cells?
Well, so I think it's just the same kind of discussion that I had with about adult stem cells. They're just a different type, probably like mesenchymal stem cells. They might be able to be passaged longer, but it's the same kind of limitations. They can't make every cell type in the human body. They're more limited as far as how much you can expand them before they die, or you start to lose the quality of the cells. So I think that, you know, every time we see a new cell type coming up, that's typically the answer. There are limitations there, and you have to understand the limitations of the cell, both from the standpoint of your ability to expand it in culture and your ability to make different cell types with it.
Do you feel like the politics of this issue in general have gotten any less divisive than they were 5 years ago, 10 years ago?
Well, I think certainly with the change in NIH's policy with the Obama administration, that certainly was a step in the right direction, in that it put that decision of whether a cell line was acceptable from an ethical point of view back into a committee at NIH, where you have scientists and ethicists reviewing it. That, to me, makes more sense than just putting a date. You know, it was tough to understand what the rationale was for just saying anything derived before this date is okay, anything after it's not okay. So, you know, I think that certainly is a step in the right direction, and you know, I hope that with that we can, like I said, get some new cell lines that are derived without using murine feeders and be able to use those for treatments down the road.
Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah,